The next episode of Property Investing Insights, I've got Kate and Melissa back in the studio, and we're going to talk about everything that holds you back on investing, the fears, the mistakes, and then of course we've got the age-old story about the timeshare.
Investing Insights with Right Property Group, exploring trends in real estate and helping property investors gain financial security.
Hello everyone and welcome to Property Investing Insights. And for once, I've actually been able to time that right and had the riff end as I started to talk. So that's a new record. Backed by popular demand today, the two beauties at RPG, Kate Kakatos and Melissa Matheson, it wasn't by design. I really wanted to wing this alone, but public demand got the better of me, and we're here. So I'll be talking to them later today about how the fears and the mistakes have stunted the growth of their portfolio, and what they see talking to potential clients and clients alike in terms of how people make these mistakes. But before we do that, obviously, this is March, and what threw most people was that everyone expected Reserve Bank to have come in and put in a interest rate decision, but didn't happen. And the reason for that, of course, is that we are now switching on to 8 meetings per year. So the next meeting is in the middle of the month, and so it'll be at the time of recording next Tuesday is when they're going to do the traditional meeting to decide where we're heading with interest rate, and that might have a bearing on a lot of decisions people make, and perhaps a lot of people are waiting to see what the decision is before they actually get on and start their investing journey or resume their investing journey. And the question I have is that if you're waiting for that long, are you waiting to pay more? Food for thought. But Kate, welcome.
Hello. Thanks, Victor. Well, now, after talking about the interest rate, you know, movement, I was wondering, do you have a prediction for everybody today?
I do. There's only 3 outcomes. It'll either go up, go down, or stay the same.
I think you've locked it in.
That's right. And so I've got 100% predictability rate now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, hedge all bets. That's it. Mitigate any of the risks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Melissa, what's your prediction about interest rates?
My expert, highly qualified, not position is, I think they might go down by 0.25.
Ooh.
Watch this space.
Big call. Okay, I'll get out of that rabbit hole.
Yep.
Yeah, because my crystal ball, I bought at the same Kmart as you did. So we don't know. Even economists get these things wrong, don't they?
They absolutely do. Bit like the weathermen.
That's right. Yeah.
People.
Really, look, if you make enough predictions, eventually get it right.
Yeah, one of them has to be right. That's right. Yeah. Throw as many out there as you can.
That's true. And then, of course, we always go back and say, no, actually, that's what I meant. Right. So it's interesting how people want to base their investing journey with what else is happening, the rhetoric out there, and most people are investing via media rather than investing via fundamentals, right? And so what I wanted to do today was talk about, last podcast we talked about your journeys and how you started and what has got you in life in terms of investing, and both had very different journeys, right? Because different age group, different outcomes, different goals, different financial fingerprint. But I bet that you both have made similar mistakes, and you both are seeing similar mistakes being made by clients. And the beauty of it is that we are looking at guiding our clients because of the life experience we have behind us for in terms of investing. So I'm going to start with you, Melissa.
Lucky me.
Yeah, lucky you. because you've pressed the green button first, right? And
is that because she's wearing a green dress?
That's it.
Yep. I thought it was because I'm substantially older than Kate.
I don't know. I still look like
and
a spring chicken to me.
Substantially younger than you.
That pay review, by the way.
Can't
Cancelled. Cancelled.
I'll just approve it in the background. Don't
thanks. Thanks. We look after each other.
As you can see, folks, I have got no clout in this organisation.
No.
I'm just a guy with a little bit of knowledge, and you know, these beauties, they have much more clout than I have, right? But so, what major mistake have you made in your portfolio?
Well, Vic, there's been a few, and I was going to bring a pile of notebooks with all of my notes. That's got all of my mistakes. Andrew and I have made several mistakes in our portfolio, and they were mainly green newbie type mistakes. Mm-hmm. So first of all, with our very first property that we bought, we did that by ourselves, and we were literally told by our bank manager, go and buy a property somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And we went, okay, somewhere, where would that be? And he said, just pick a few suburbs and go and find something. And off we went, and I literally looked at the screen with realestate.com and went, okay, oh, Quakers Hill, that looks good.
Mm-hmm.
And we found a place in Quakers Hill, and we bought it with not much knowledge of why,
mm-hmm.
what it was going to do. So, and I find that a lot of people that we speak to, particularly new people coming in and starting their investing journey, they've done this, that they don't know. So mm-hmm. you don't know what you don't know, but that's why they come to us, because we can tell them why an area is good. So I wish we would have done that. So even though the property's gone quite well, we probably could have done better if we'd done some more research rather than going eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Yeah, and when people do get started, that's where they do end up, right? They end up close to home, in areas they're familiar with or areas they've grown up in, because they've seen the change that has happened, right? And those changes can happen in all areas, so the gentrification effect and the adding of new subdivisions. And sometimes we tend to confuse the activity in the market in terms of growth, right? But it's just normal bouncing activity. And we need to drill down to look at the fundamentals in terms of, okay, well, what are the fundamentals? I think the biggest thing that people tend to ignore is the employment hubs close by, because that gives cohesion within the community. And generally when families do come into that area, then they tend not to move as much. So the tenancy is more stable.
Definitely. And I think when you talk about employment hubs and people not moving, often when if you've got young children and they've started school, and with catchment areas, etc., and stability, you don't want to be moving the kids, you know, often throughout mm-hmm. their schooling. Mm-hmm. So often people say, I'm going to stay here in this suburb for as long as I can to get my kids through primary school or high school, just because I don't want to have that shift for them.
Mm-hmm. And especially, I guess what you're talking about there is that area then has normally a good mix of owner occupiers and investors, and that makes it a fairly stable area to invest in. And then the get out clause is very well ticked, because you've got a larger buying pool to buy the properties off you.
Yes, and I feel as though from some of the conversations I've been having probably over the past few months, people aren't thinking about what their exit plan is.
Mm-hmm.
So the property needs to have good fundamentals behind it, and it needs to be attractive to an owner-occupier.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Because, that's a bigger buying pool, right? And they buy in any market, whereas investors tend to step back from the market when the rates are too high or the sentiment is not good. Or the legislative changes that are happening, right? So a good example of it is the negative gearing conversation we're starting to have. Kate, I'm going to bounce to you.
Yeah.
You've been around for a little while in the investing sphere.
Mm-hmm.
What's your biggest mistake?
There's been a few, but I think the biggest mistake, and I hope, you know, by today discussing these mistakes, it's going to make them a little bit less common for everybody else, give them something to just keep in the back of their mind and remember for when you're on your honeymoon, like I was, and when I made my biggest mistake. And that was I'll set the scene for you guys, okay? So
it's a good one, everyone. It's a really good one.
Look, I was on holidays. We're in Hawaii. The sun was shining. It was a beautiful environment, very relaxed. And I knew that buying properties and on holidays is not a good idea. And I knew a lot then. I was 24. I knew everything almost. So, but I was in a completely different frame of mind. And I guess I was making a very emotional decision at that point in time. What happened was there was complimentary tickets to a luau. And I thought all you had to do is go and sit and listen to someone, have a chat.
Free coffee and cake.
Mai Tais.
Then you get your free tickets to the luau. However, what I didn't know is in Hawaii, in America, they've got the slickest, smoothest salesman on the face of the planet. They've done so much training. I mean, the guy even gave me his home phone number to, contact him if I ever had any questions. And it was all the bells and whistles. But what I did is I bought a timeshare property. And so there was the glossy brochures, there was the idea of these fabulous holidays that I was going to go on all across the world, just like I was on my honeymoon at that point in time with my new husband. But what I didn't realise is that once the dust settles on that and then you go to trying to book your holiday, somewhere in the scheme of that, I'd lost all of my 300 points that I'd acquired from purchasing that, or 300,000 points or whatever it was, from purchasing the property because I didn't click the right button. Couldn't get all of that back. You needed those to be able to book, priority in advance, wherever it was. And what happened after losing all my points, I then couldn't really make a booking of where I wanted to go. It became really cumbersome.
How much did it cost you?
It wasn't the biggest mistake, less than $100,000.
For a 24-year-old, that's a lot of money.
It was, yeah. And the interest rates, mind you, were ridiculous. In Australia at the time, must have been probably, I could have got a personal loan for a much cheaper rate than what I paid over there at the time. And I didn't realise that there's all the unexpected costs that come with also buying a timeshare. The strata fees, the annual levies that they impose. There was so many different things that I just didn't factor in. And I guess I glossed over it in the contract that we signed while we were getting fed the delicious coffee and cake. And then when you start to look back and you think, okay, now I've made that mistake, let's move on, I'll sell that. You then quickly realise that selling a second-hand timeshare opportunity isn't that easy either. And so experience is the best teacher, and I think I learnt a hard lesson in that opportunity. But I'm here to share it with you all today so that you can all avoid it, because, it's important to not just get caught up in the holiday romance and actually still get your free tickets to the luau and not learn buy the property in the meantime. Yeah, learning to say no. And it was actually, I don't want to blame my husband but I'll put some of the blame on him because he was there too. But
And note to self, when we go to Hawaii in a few weeks, oh, by the way, I need some leave. Where we're staying, you can buy timeshare. Yeah, and it sounds really, really good.
It does.
But no.
No.
I need to think of you, Kate, and go, no, don't do it.
Yeah, so $1 million question or $100,000 question. Have you still got the timeshare?
I do not, no, thankfully. I buried my head in the sand for a very long time and cost myself even more money because I just didn't want to deal with the problem. But eventually I just let it go for basically nothing. Yeah. So it was a very big opportunity cost from my respect. But it was very difficult communicating with the departments overseas, different time zones. There was so many factors to it. So at the end of the day, I just wiped my hands of it as quickly as I could 3 years later or whatever it was. And I felt better not having to deal with the stress of it. Yeah, it was something I was happy to call at that point in time and walk away from, because I just knew it wasn't going to be something that was resolved quickly and something that I guess I just needed to be done with. I wanted to look back and have fond memories of the honeymoon instead of.
So that's a really important lesson and a really good methodology, right? So a lot of times when people have a loss or they realize they've made a mistake, they tend to hold on to their loss with the hope that it'll turn around, rather than cutting it hard, cutting it early, and then moving on to the next opportunity so that you can recoup that loss really quickly, right? And we find that with property as well, where they have got the wrong property in the portfolio, but it's there. They don't want to sell it down because it's an admission of making a mistake.
And that's the difficult thing, or difficult pill to swallow sometimes, is you don't want to realize the mistake, and you only do that, I guess, when you sell, because there's always the potential, market might change, you know. I think Steve had a property, his first purchase actually, I remember him telling me the story about that, you know, 10, 15 years later after first buying it, it was worth exactly what he paid for it at that point in time. And he was that person who just wasn't willing to let it go. He missed the opportunity of when he probably should have sold, and it was a continual.
Well, I've made plenty of mistakes, obviously, in my portfolio. I still carry one of my mistakes, which are two holiday let apartments in up the coast.
Do you still have yours?
I still have mine, yeah.
When was the last time you went and stayed there?
Actually, no, I have started using that quite well now. Where every 6 months I go up with the soccer boys. So we have a group of friends that we've been playing together for 17 years now. And so it becomes a good boys' weekend away. Reshmi occasionally takes her friends there. But that's about the gist of it. We've had a few family holidays there. But if you're going back, keep going back to the same place, it sort of doesn't feel like a holiday anymore.
That's right, yeah.
So it's important, right? We need to divorce emotion and the feel-good stuff away from the actual mechanics of investing, and making sure that, you know, we're not speculating.
And that's something that we hear quite a lot from people that Kate and I speak to. They'll say to us, yes, we want to buy an investment property and we think we might like to retire in it in 10 to 15 years, and maybe we'll use it as a holiday house as well and Airbnb it on the other times. But they haven't actually really thought it through. They haven't done the figures. And then when we have a bit of a chat to them and drill it down, they're like, oh, okay, I can see why that's probably not a good idea. We'd be better to do an alternative.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that's very hard to drill out of people, right? Like all three of us have made those mistakes, right? So it is part and parcel of it, especially if you're running the journey on your own and not bouncing things off other investors. And in today's day and age, we are really have got no excuse, because there's so much information out there, right? And you just need to tap into the right mentors, if you can use that word, to make sure that you're benefiting from their mistakes so that you're not making those mistakes.
And I had two of the best at that time as well, and I still made my mistake. And I think I knew in my heart that I was making an emotional decision. I knew if I called and spoke and ran the numbers and did all this, that the answer would have been no. So I had my blinkers on, and I was very much making the mistake, but owning it as well. Like, I knew it was going to be my mistake.
Yeah, so Melissa, I think some people are just simply not coachable.
No, they're not. And I think it was around the same time that you bought the vacuum from the door-to-door salesman.
The $4,000 Kirby vacuum cleaner. That was not a property-related mistake, but also a very classic mistake. And I think there's a common theme here, you know, a slick salesman.
It's hard to say no to.
So I think that applies to property though as well. And I hear a lot of clients where we're having the initial discussions and going through our services, and they're expecting me to put some type of hard sell onto them and say, well, you know, and here's our forms and you need to engage us and whatnot. But often there's, you know, months of pre-work that we're putting into somebody to before we're letting them know that we think they're in a position to invest. And I think they're often shocked by that because everybody's conditioned to, you know, be expecting to be sold something. Yeah. And when you have a service that you're delivering, it's very opposite of that.
And we're not salespeople. Just saying, I you know, once someone's had the mother Mel talk from me, they're like, yeah, okay, I can see you're not trying to sell me snake oil.
Yeah. And I think as the cycle turns, and because I'd imagine that we're at the peak of the interest rate cycle, and as people get closer to the financial year and the accountants say, you've got to go do something about your tax, there'll be a lot of these ads popping up on social media in particular, where everyone's spruiking how good it is. And really, we need to be looking at it as a balancing of good and bad that can happen with investing, mm-hmm. and making sure that we've addressed all the bad first, so that you know the rest of the journey is relatively uneventful. Mm-hmm. So we're not having those big upheavals when you have. But investing's never linear.
Right. No, yeah.
No.
And one of the biggest hurdles that a lot of the clients that I'm dealing with are facing is not taking action, mm-hmm. procrastinating, overthinking. They have decision fatigue. It's a real issue for a lot of people because there is so much information available out there and they just consume and consume and consume, but they never put that in, well, they haven't yet put that into action.
Mm.
And the learning doesn't really happen until you start taking that action,
right.
and you go through that process. Yep. And so before making any big decision, you need to undertake a lot of research, and they need to ask these questions and do their relevant research, but then they need to take that time as well to sit back, digest and plan what actually, you know, feels right for them, what makes the most logical sense, what fits their position, so that then they can actually confidently take that step forward and start making a choice. Because all of our clients, all of our staff, we're all investors, and I think we're truly committed to making a change in our lives at some point. And so we need, although we're committed to it and it's a nice goal up in the air as a pretty picture, we actually then need to start putting the foundations in place to actually make that then happen. And I guess what people are afraid of as well is missing out on the opportunity cost for procrastination. You know, they're losing out on the compounding effect of their investing early and potentially benefiting from that capital gain and long-term growth, and they have the FOMO of missing out of the market. But I guess as long as they've done that foundational work, looked at their budget, done their savings, restructured their loans, they're in a good position. They understand what capital they have available to be able to move forward and their buffers set aside, then it's about...
Then why not?
That's it. Why not?
The cost of doing nothing.
Mm.
What is that cost?
Yeah.
And further to what you're saying, Kate, I think it's a bit like being an apprentice. So you start your apprenticeship, you go to TAFE to do the bookwork, but you're actually on the tools, on the job learning, and that's no different with property.
Mm-hmm.
You buy a property and you are learning as you go. You've done the foundational work, but it's only through the experience, like what we've been through, that you actually pick up the on-the-job learning.
Yeah, I agree. And no secret, I play a lot of soccer, right? And sometimes it's
in the over 70s, wasn't it?
A few categories, Dan. And sometimes, much to Reshmi's disapproval, I play too much soccer. But a good analogy over here is, right, you could be watching soccer on telly and become an absolute expert, right?
Mm-hmm.
But going out on the field, the first thing is that you realize that you've got to run, right, and get winded really quickly. And then it's the muscle memory to having played multiple games and playing with the same players over and over again. You know where each piece moves and you can pretty much pass the ball without even looking, right? And property investing is no different, right? If you're being guided by someone that's already gone through life's journey, as far as investing is concerned, they've got a lot of muscle memory, right? And they might not be able to back it up 100% with the data that's available or the emotional data that's available, but they can guide you through because they've actually gone through that game piece themselves. And it just becomes an innate thing that they do, that simply they do it without thinking.
Mm. It's a reflex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what common fears do you find the clients have when they come to us?
There's quite a few, and we've had a bit of a chat, Kate and I, and the common ones are interest rates are too high.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, are they? they might be if you have been around the past couple of years.
Yeah, especially if you're working off a base of 2%, yeah, right?
But but they're not. And so that shouldn't be a fear. Mm-hmm. So once we talk people through interest rates and having buffers and being able to make repayments, then they feel a lot better about that.
Mm.
And I think tell yourself a different story, because a lot of the media have a lot to answer for, because they're either, you know, boom or bust.
Yep.
And it's all, oh, interest rates are too high and you shouldn't be doing this and doing that. But if you've got the foundations right, then interest rates are fine.
Mm-hmm.
They're a fact of life.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the other one is not buying the right property,
mm-hmm.
and also not knowing where to start and not knowing what a suitable strategy is for them, and just being in overwhelm.
Mm.
So just setting out some key pieces of information and go through step A, B, C and D, and then we'll get you on your way. But it's common.
Yeah.
Like, they're really, really common.
And it's a lot of these common objections or common fears that people have can be, you can help your, sleep at night if you've thought that plan all the way through to the end.
Mm-hmm.
So not just looking at what the first action is that they need to take, but also what the worst case scenario could be and what steps they'd take at that point in time. So, referencing having an exit strategy, but what that looks like. So is that going to be, having to sell, worst case scenario? How does that, what are the worst case scenario figures there? If you're still comfortable with that, then why not?
Yep.
If you could refinance or transition that into a different type of an investment, then you still have an action that mm-hmm. you can take, that you're not fully locked in to this mistake and you've got ways around it. The interest rates, and if they are, if they do get to a point where it's unachievable for them to continue holding that, it's impacting their lifestyle. You have choices.
Yep.
But knowing when you're going into that property, what that choice or those options are, mm-hmm. of those choices, is what can then help you feel confident in making that decision. But a lot of the time you're just thinking of all of the, worst case scenarios, but then not addressing what steps you could take if those worst case scenarios happened. And once you've addressed that and you've got that plan cemented in your mind and you've got somebody to bounce those ideas off, it helps you then be able to really say again, okay, well, why not now?
yeah, absolutely. And it's important to acknowledge that it's very easy to get into property. It's much harder to get out,
yeah.
right? So we need to be looking at how we're going to get out if things don't go our way. And it could be that property is still performing really well. Life just turned on you.
That's right.
And you may have, lost your career, lost your health, or it could be that you've decided to up your career and get into self-employed and you need to fund that little hiatus that you've got to bring your business up and running again. And therefore, I think people are really scared about the four-letter word in property, right? Sell. With good advice, sometimes it's okay. Well, most times it is okay to sell down to regroup and start again. I've done that several times in my portfolio. Most of the time by choice, but sometimes it's inevitable, right? So you need to reset to recalibrate the portfolio's cash flow to then build up again. And it's important that the old adage here is that you buy properties and hold them forever. Yes, that's true for if you're looking at just the one property, or you're looking at one or two properties. But if you're looking at actually replacing income, it does mean a couple of properties under your belt. You can't really retire on just the one property, right? Unless it's a block of units and you've paid out all the units, right? So it's important to understand that we will be holding multiple properties, and it could be in different entities as well. You need to have a game plan to address if things do go wrong. Yeah, so not always taking an offensive approach, you're also taking a defensive approach at the same time as you're taking the offensive approach.
Mm. And on the different entities, one of those is your self-managed super fund,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of people are starting to now
isn't consider. That the flavor of the month?
It is, it? Yeah. And I think a lot of the reason could be attributed to some of the people that are not able to borrow in their personal names anymore. So mm-hmm. now they're looking to see, well, how else can I get into the market? And self-managed super fund is becoming something, more popular in that respect. And mm-hmm. I guess there's some people that it's relevant for that, you know, we would suggest that could be a great parallel strategy to run in addition to their personal portfolios. Mm-hmm. And I think generally people that are more suitable to that are people that have got a bit of a larger superannuation balance, someone who, you know, it's going to give them greater control over their investments, but it's not going, I mean, you could start a self-managed super fund with $100,000, right? There's nothing stopping you from opening an account, but compliance costs are going to quickly erode the capital that you've got in there, and those annual auditing fees that, you know, come into play, and the additional admin nightmare that you have with having that is something to consider. But if you had, say, a combined superannuation balance of around $200,000, that's something much more achievable to start with, right? And it's something that you can consider as an alternate strategy.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misinformation within the super fund sphere, right? And people are just anxious to get in just in case they miss out, right? And this is where really good advice does come into play. And some of the common mistakes we see is people bringing their kids into the self-managed super fund. I'd say that you need to go back and get the advice. Different age groups, different outcomes. Yeah, it can work if the fund is big enough.
But is it needed?
Yeah, you know? Is it needed?
Yeah.
And so. I have a personal story on SMSF. Mm-hmm. I was selling what I refer to as one of my crappers in my portfolio. anyone that's spoken to me on the phone will have heard that I have a couple of crappers. And, you know, they're okay. But I sold one just before Christmas, and the agent contacted me to say that there was a potential purchaser, and this man was looking to purchase the property for his self-managed super. And red flag immediately. I said, I just don't feel comfortable selling that property to someone purchasing for SMSF. Mm-hmm. And he said, what? But he's paying a good price. I said, I'm not willing to accept his offer, because I knew damn well that that property wasn't suitable for SMSF. Mm-hmm. And I think because it was a bit cheaper, and that's all he probably had, that he just thought, well, I can do this. It's a good property for my super.
Yeah.
So I didn't sell it to him. I took a lower price, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, and that's ethics for you, right? So, you know, you are able to sleep at night knowing that you've done the right thing. Yeah. And this is where it's really important. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And it is within our ability to guide people to make sure that they're not, even if we're not directly benefiting from it, right? Like you actually made a loss out of that decision.
Yeah, right? It cost yourself money.
But you only made a monetary loss. Mm. You made an emotional gain out of that, right?
And a moral gain out of that. I just
couldn't
do it, Vic.
Yeah.
I was like, no, that does not align with my values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you want to buy cheaper properties, contact Mel. she will negotiate herself down.
Lol.
So what are other fears or mistakes we're seeing, Mel, in terms of people that are contacting us and we then need to set the course straight for them?
I had a good one the other day. It was a lovely young lady who she was wanting to buy a property, and I think you might have even spoken to her after me. And yes, it was. She actually did. She came on board as a client, and she was being presented a property, and her parents said, oh no, we don't think you should buy it.
Mm.
Which, it's great if you get well-founded advice, and we always go to our parents to see what they say. But her parents didn't own property. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any relevant qualifications in property, so they weren't really in a position to say you should or you shouldn't. And we often hear that from the people that we speak to. They'll say, oh, my parents have said that I shouldn't be doing this, or my friend's brother's cousin said that I should only be buying this sort of property. Well, based on what? Are they suitably qualified? Do they have properties themselves? Have they been through the journey? So often people are making mistakes in choosing properties because they're seeking advice from people who actually don't have a clue. It's like the backyard barbecue investor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
And it's well meant, like their parents.
Well intentioned.
Well intentioned, exactly. And it's again something that becomes a bit emotional because you've gone to and trusted and relied upon these people your entire life, and they mean well, but they can actually be
a deterrent.
That's right.
And I think this is where you need to recognize that perhaps you've got more theoretical knowledge than parents have, and they have grown up in a different financial era and a different information era. Investing as it stood years ago has changed quite a bit. We now become borderless, especially in today's market, there is a lot of dynamic investing in the sense that we're not just going after the house and land packages, if you're doing it properly, right? Yep. We're not going after the house and land packages. We're not going necessarily for the pretty properties. We're going for properties that have got pretty results, right? And there's a big difference between the two, and it becomes a journey, right? And especially if your parents are helping you start investing, perhaps it's good to have that joint meeting with the advisors. But also importantly, make sure they consume the same information that you have. So you're both on the same page, and then they can guide you through life's experience and correlate it to what you're trying to achieve, as opposed to perhaps taking a approach of, no, don't get into too much debt, or don't get into this area, or don't buy a house that's weatherboard, as an example, right? It comes back from, I suppose, again, first of all, their fear of you getting financially hurt, but also from life's own experience. Now, if they've got multiples of properties, I suppose you've got to take their word for it, because they have got
different
life
story.
Experience. Different story.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to always question where the advice is coming from. Is it well-meaning advice based on fear or misinformation, or is it through life experience?
And I know my beautiful mum, she used to ring me often, you're not buying any more properties, are you? Oh, because, you know, you're going into too much debt, and, oh, interest rates are going to be going up, and I do worry. And so I got to the stage where I wouldn't even tell mum when we'd bought another property, because she used to worry herself sick at night. I'm like, mum, you don't need to worry about us. We know what we're doing. And they had their own home. She was just coming from that place of love and care and concern.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess quite a bit of the mistakes happen because people are too eager to get started, as opposed to getting the groundwork done first. The property selection is the last thing in that process, right? You need to get the finance in place. First of all, before the finance, you need to get you sort out your goals. Then you've got to put the fuel in the tank, right? How much capital you've got.
Yeah.
Then map out the journey, press the go button on the GPS, and that guides you to the right property.
And then some of the fears, I think, come into play at that stage. Mm-hmm. So they've done all that work, they've taken all of that action, and then at that stage now they're starting to think, what about ongoing repairs or maintenance? Mm-hmm. What about, you know, long vacancy periods? What about potentially poor management and wrong advice from that respect, or the certain fears that tend to pop up at this level?
Mm-hmm.
Then is something that I think when we're suggesting a property, I know how we operate, is that we'll always be able to make a service-based recommendation on somebody that we've known, we've used, we've trusted, we've seen the results that they've been able to achieve for us and our clients, and then, you know, pair them to someone local in that area who's got an expert in their field and knowledge and of that area as well. Because I had a client who wanted to manage their own property because they felt like that would give them more control, and they would then be able to, you know, make sure that, you know, that they were on top of it the minute the tenant was behind in arrears and things like that. And we know that there's certain processes and that need to be followed when it comes to things like arrears and issuing notices on time and whatnot. But are you an expert? Are you a property manager now? Do you understand the legislation for that state? And, you know, it varies from New South Wales to Queensland and Victoria. It's all different. And if you don't actually, you know, meet those requirements and the timelines in which to issue, you know, notices and things like, it becomes ineffective. It's and you can actually do yourself more damage. Or like me, when I also managed my own property for a little while. And the
was that around the same time as the timeshare and the vacuum cleaner?
Well, actually it was. It was in my 20s. I think there was a lot of questionable choices in my 20s. But I had a really great relationship with the tenants. I thought, why not? You know, they'll pay the rent. But then it got to the point where they weren't paying their rent, and I knew their children, and how do I say to somebody, how do I force them, or, you know, say that it's a requirement that, you know, you pay your rent, and I issue them those notices? I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
You got emotionally invested.
I got emotionally invested, and it's easy to think that you're not going to,
mm-hmm.
because, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, we're all human. And that's how we operate and live every day is based on emotions.
So. Look, I've self-managed my portfolio, and I must say I'm a really good self-manager. The arrears was only $17,000, Kate, wasn't it?
I think it might have been like 24 at one point. Yeah, but yeah, it was.
So it took Kate to go through the portfolio and look at, you know, which tenants were behind, because the record keeping was superb. And she presented an Excel spreadsheet to me and said, hey, you know, you're costing yourself 24K here. You know, that day I put it straight to the property manager, right? Mm. Because I thought I knew the legislation, I knew everything, but I let life take over, right? That's because that was not my focus.
And it's not what you're doing all day, every day. That's something that you're just kind of looking in on every once in a while. And sometimes life gets busy, that every once in a while pushes out a bit longer and longer. Yeah. And all of a sudden it's $24,000.
Yeah. Which wasn't any time recent.
No, a very long time ago. Yeah. I'm giving away how long I've known you for now.
And when you own a number of properties, it actually even takes time to open the emails with the monthly statements and keep track of them, let alone managing the day-to-day from a self-managed point of view. And
the number of properties that you had at that time, it wasn't a significant amount per tenant, so it wasn't like they'd gotten exorbitantly behind, but it was spread across a few properties.
And one thing as well I'd like to add with when Kate was talking about properties needing, you're having fear about properties needing maintenance, etc., it's a fact of life that each property you own or live in is going to require repairs and maintenance. So that's where you need to have suitable buffers in place, have the money before you need it, because chances are the day the hot water service goes is the same day that the oven's going to go, and the same day you're driving down the street and your car blows up.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have enough money behind you, whether it be in an equity release or in savings. But you don't want to be stressing about that, because a hot water service, for instance, or an air conditioner, couple of grand, and you need to fix it immediately because it's classified as an emergency repair.
Yep.
So you can't just say, oh, I'll think about that. No.
Mm. You have to find the money straight away.
That's
right? And you go through cycles with these repairs, because in my portfolio I had about 10 years of relatively no repairs, right? Very minimal, in the hundreds of dollars rather than thousands, right? Then I got hit left, right, and center as a catch up of all those maintenance and repairs to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars, right? And obviously, as we get into more inclement weather, that doesn't help either. As people work from home and they during lockdowns, they spent more time at home. There was more wear and tear and more things noticed that was wrong, where traditionally they would have just let it be, but now they want it fixed because they're spending more time in the home, right? So you go through these cycles with repair, and it's important that each year you set aside a buffer for your repairs and maintenance, because you may not use it that year, but it'll have a catch-up effect down the track if you hold the property long enough.
Definitely. Mm. And even just on another note, if you happen to own a unit or a townhouse or a villa, something that's in a strata complex, do yourself a favour and get on the committee. And if you're not on the committee, at least vote and read the AGM meeting notices and be actively involved, because that's where a lot of special levies, and I'm speaking from personal experience, that's where a lot of special levies can crop up if, you know, maintenance isn't being done adequately, and then all of a sudden you have have these unexpected expenses with strata.
Yeah, and especially if you've got you know, a good mix of owner occupiers and investors in the complex, which is the right type of property to buy. The owner occupiers would want to beautify the property, not necessarily from a return of investment point of view, but more from an aesthetics point of view, right? Whereas the investors, we want the numbers, right? We want it to be functional. We want it to be safe. We want it to be attractive to the tenants in that area. But we don't necessarily want to, you know, redo the gutters if they're not necessary to be done. We'd rather do the repairs as opposed to the replacement as such. So if you're not on the communication, it can get away from you really quickly, because the owner occupiers will always vote, in most cases, for beautification of the property.
Yes, they will.
I think it's happened to all of us.
So therein lies the problem, right? On one side, we don't want a area that's, you know, predominantly investor driven. But on the other side, if there is a lot of owner occupiers in that mix, it does add to the need to rejuvenate the property sooner rather than later. So it's a balancing act, and these are things that you can predict in terms of your expenditure if you're actually informed and actually open your emails and read the notices.
Yes, it does make a difference. Hint, hint. Yes, and I do. I'm on all the committees.
There you go. So in the interest of time, what's the one big thing that you'd say when you're talking to clients, or from personal experience, that people should look at in terms of things that will hold them back in terms of their portfolio building?
What's holding them back?
Or one fear.
One fear. The fear of the unknown. Life is unknown.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So one of my favourite sayings, there's two, feel the fear and do it anyway. But have a good plan and take action, and it's going to take work. You need to put the work in to get the results.
Absolutely.
Nothing comes easy, but you want to, if your overall goal is to be in a better position today, and that's health, property, personal, mental health, you need to do the work and take the action.
Yeah. What about you, Kate?
Well, having the patience, the diligence, the strategic planning, all of those things, I think, you know, aligning to what Mel's saying. I think the other fear or issue that I find stopping people is just, you know, the fear of stagnant growth or, buying and things are going backward. And, I mean, nobody has their crystal ball, but if you are looking at the data, looking at all of the right attributes to making that kind of type of decision about buying your property, it's got to be something that you've got to trust the research at some point in time as well, and trust the process and the advice that you're being given. And it's something that the property market is never linear. There's always ebbs and flows. It goes up and down, but you'd need to be aware of that too before. So having that understanding a little bit more is, I think, what people struggle with, because they know that it's inevitable that there's going to be ebbs and flows in things, but they are just too conscious of the fact that it's going to, you know, the world's going to go upside down and, you know, everything's going to fall to pieces. But at the end of the day, everybody needs a roof over their head, and there's always going to be supply, well, demand as one of the biggest things. And then I guess as long as we can continue supplying, then there's always the need. So that's something that I feel a lot of people understand, but also it's just still creeps in the back of their mind. It's a bit of a fear somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you won't be human if it didn't
creep in,
right?
Yeah.
That's really sage advice for today. And my takeaway for you today is that invest within the cycles, not the immediate trends. So what I mean by that is that you'll see your immediate trend, say, in a market where there's an immediate upswing and everyone's buying there. Nothing wrong with buying in there, but you need to understand what you need to buy in that trend, as opposed to where no one else is buying, but the fundamentals are there. What do you need to buy there? So don't be afraid to go against the grain, so long as you're buying properties within your means. So that's it for today. If you have found this information really beneficial, I would want you to please share our podcast with your social network. That'll help us immensely. And until next time, goodbye.
The information featured in this podcast is general in nature, does not take into consideration your financial situation or individual needs, and should not be relied upon. Before making any investment, insurance, tax, property, or financial planning decision, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you.